We're continuing with our series, Judaism Head to Toe. We're up to the mouth. We had discussed last week a little bit of what it takes to make meat kosher. How we have to get a kosher animal. We have to slaughter it in a kosher manner. We have to remove the non-kosher fats. We have to salt it. We discussed you wash it, then salt it, then wash it again. We discussed chickens. Then we discussed fish, and we discussed cleaning the fish and the knife. If you're in Chinatown, what you need to do in order to get the fish kosher. And now we're going to discuss a little bit of meat and milk. So we know that in the mitzvah of meat and milk, the Torah taught us a new concept. Ordinarily, we know there's a kosher animal and a non-kosher animal. We discussed the 18 terefot, that there are 18 blemishes, physical issues that an animal can have that can cause a kosher animal to be non-kosher. We said we don't check for all of them. You guys remember? Anyone remember any examples? What we discussed?
The lungs.
What else did we discuss? We discussed a little bit of what glot is, right? What else did we discuss? Something about the head and the skull and the brains. We discussed that there's a membrane around the brain, and if that membrane is pierced, so that's another type of trefa. We don't check for that. Okay, we discussed the foot, if the foot is cut above the knee. So we discussed that a kosher animal could also be not kosher if it has one of the 18 terefot, one of the 18 things that make it disqualified. Now we have another thing. The Torah tells us that if I take kosher meat and kosher milk and I cook them together, it becomes non-kosher. So let's define meat. Meat, midoraita, is animal's meat. Milk is milk that comes from an animal as well. So it doesn't matter if it's going to be cow's milk or goat's milk or ram's milk, right? Any animal's milk mixed with meat is going to be asur midoraita. What about chicken and meat and milk? So that's a rabbinic prohibition. Midrabanan, they prohibited also chicken with milk. So let's begin with the baseline. Chazal said, after I eat meat, I may not eat... Let's start. I'm not allowed to cook meat and milk together. So I have a problem if I want to work at Burger King, right? Part of the job at Burger King is making cheeseburgers. So each one will ask the local Orthodox rabbi if there's room to be lenient, to work at a place that you're making non-kosher meat. It's not my meat, it's not my milk, but I'm making meat with milk. So I'm not supposed to cook meat and milk together. I'm not supposed to eat meat and milk together. But before we come to the point of eating, let's stick to the point of cooking for a minute. Chazal tell us that when you cook in a pot, it retains the flavor for 24 hours. So technically, 24 hours after I cooked meat in a pot, I should be allowed to cook milk in the pot. But Chazal said no, because if you start doing that, after 24 hours, what happens? The flavor in the walls of the pot goes bad. What's called notein tam lifgam. It gives a pungent flavor out into the food. You no longer have the positive flavor that was absorbed. Let's finish and then we'll take questions. So Chazal told us, if we're going to do that, what's going to happen? People are going to forget, and they're going to end up using pots within the 24-hour period. They won't remember. So Chazal said you have to have separate dishes. We have separate meat and milk. And traditionally, the milk is smooth, and the meat has a design. Traditionally, we make a sign on the meat. That's why you'll see that traditionally, the meat cutlery has some kind of design on it. It's not biblical. Technically, you could have a different division, but that's the tradition. That's the way we do it. That the milk cutlery is relatively smooth, and the meat cutlery has a design. We should label the dishes that look similar around the house. Sometimes you have ladles. So a ladle is very often not a part of a set. You're taking out soup. Well, sometimes you make soup with cheese, and sometimes you make soup with meat, chicken soup and the like. We don't delineate between chicken and meat. It's all meat from our perspective, right? What we call fleishiks, it's all meat. So the meat has to be separate and the milk has to be separate and the dishes have to be separate. So I'm going to keep my meat dishes on a separate shelf or at least delineate it so I could tell the difference. You're not supposed to take one set and just divide it, half meat and half milk. You'll get married, you'll get a set. You'll say, we're a young couple, what do I do with the whole set of dishes? So if you want to divide it, you have to make something, a mark. So you can, usually what people do is they take nail polish or they take paint and they put a blue mark on the milk and a red mark on the meat. and that way it should be delineated. Where does this become tricky? On things that have plastic handles. The paint comes off. You have to color the pot, you also have to color the lid, so that you don't end up putting the wrong lid on the wrong pot, because that brings you into trouble. So we have meat, we have milk, and then we have parv. We have that which is neither. You make noodles. Maybe you'll want to eat those noodles with your chicken soup. Maybe you'll want to eat those noodles with ketchup and cream cheese. So you keep your noodles parv. So it's a good idea to have three types of dishes. Meat, milk, and parv. What happens if I'm eating noodles and my two-year-old is eating meat? And the way two-year-olds eat, his hands are all oily with the meat. And then he sticks his hands in and he grabs some noodles for himself. And now my noodles are oily with meat. I look at the noodles and I see the meat's oil all over the noodles. So those noodles, even though I baked them parv, they have the oil from the meat on them. That's milk. That's fleishik. That's it. I can't eat that with cream cheese, cottage cheese. What should I do? I should label the bag, meat. I should label it because maybe I won't be home when my wife comes home. And she's going to feed the kids with those noodles and cream cheese. Cottage cheese. And maybe I'm going to forget. But tomorrow morning, will I remember what happened yesterday? So when we have an item that's parv, and it becomes fleishik or milchik, and this can happen, we should label that. So that means you have ketchup. And your five-year-old decided to put ketchup on their own noodles. And as they squeeze in, they put it into the cottage cheese, and they let go, and all half the cottage cheese goes sucked into your ketchup bottle. Now you look at that ketchup bottle. What is that? You have milk in that ketchup bottle. Label it. You label the top of the ketchup bottle, milk. So that when you use it, you'll know that ketchup is milchik. People don't necessarily notice this. This comes up. A person can eat tuna. And if you're Ashkenazi, so then you don't mind eating tuna with sour cream. So you're having a tuna sandwich and you have sour cream. And then your knife that has milk on it, you might have just taken and scooped out some tuna and put it on your sandwich. But wait a second, you just put milk into your tuna. Label that tuna milchik. Because that tuna should not... Okay, we don't eat fish with meat. That's true. But let's say you just ate a fleishik meal. You're not supposed to eat that tuna. If you can see the milk in that tuna, then that's milchik tuna. If you can't see it, it got mixed in. You have a big pot of couscous. Down here they serve couscous or rice, right? And once the cook got confused and he took the meat ladle and he took out some couscous. You look and you can't see the oil from the meat. So there you don't have to go crazy over that couscous. If you can't see it inside, you don't have to invent what you don't see. But sometimes you can see it inside. Sometimes you see, like my example, where you see the kid got the noodles oily with meat. You see you got some sour cream into your tuna. You see that you got that. So then you have to label it. And that could be true with ketchup, and that could be true with mustard. People will sometimes have a barbecue, and they'll take the mustard, and then they'll wipe it on their hot dog, and then they'll go back into the mustard again. People do this with coffee. Why do I always, Thursday night, I brought hot cocoa powder. So I brought it in a cup, because I've learned my lesson. The hot cocoa powder is parv. But people sometimes don't pay attention. I brought milk, people stir it with the milk, and then they stick the spoon back in and take a second helping of the powder. Now I have milk in my hot cocoa powder. What happens if someone comes here and tells me I'm fleishik? I ate meat 5 minutes ago. So technically, I want the hot cocoa powder to remain parv. People sometimes aren't careful about their sugar. People will dip, mix their coffee, and then stick the spoon back in because they want more sugar. Well, you just stuck milk into your sugar. So now you're going to use that sugar on your hot dog? Okay, I don't eat hot dogs with sugar either, but whatever. You guys get the picture. So we try to keep our parv parv. And this is something that people aren't so sensitive to. And that's why very often it's a good idea not to take the main serving dish out to the table. You want to serve mustard, you want to serve ketchup, you want to serve hummus, take some of the hummus, put it into a small bowl, and put it out on the table. Because if you put the main dish out, there will be people who will dip and wipe and dip and wipe, and then they end up getting the oils from the meat back into your hummus and into your mustard, and then you have to label them as meat. Again, you see it, it's there. If you've seen it, so then that's meat that got mixed in. And from our perspective, the oil is meat. Now, we should not use the same vessel, the same pitcher, the same bottles when our hands are getting all oily. So that means if you're doing a barbecue of chicken wings, and now everyone's eating the chicken wings with their hands, and their hands are getting filled with grease from meat. and now you're going to put a bottle of Coke on the table. Everyone's touching that bottle of Coke, and the grease is coming off their hands onto the bottle. What's going to happen the next morning? You want to serve that bottle of Coke with breakfast. Okay, I don't know who drinks Coke for breakfast, but whatever. You're going to serve it together with the morning's bagels and cream cheese. But there's oils from the meat on it. So you're not supposed to do that. The pitcher for meat and milk should be different. If it's a pitcher that you're handling with greasy hands. So sometimes people eat pizza and their hands get all greasy. Sometimes people eat meat and their hands get all greasy. Sometimes your hands aren't greasy. So until now, what we've covered is the idea of meat and milk. Jeremiah, it's great to see you. Are you feeling better? Good. Welcome back. We missed you Thursday night and Friday, and it wasn't the same without you. You should just know. Let's review what we did so far. We said meat and milk is a chidush that the Torah tells us, that when you mix two kosher items, you end up with something not kosher. Right? Meat and milk is prohibited. It doesn't matter if it's chicken meat or animal's meat. It doesn't matter if it's cow's milk or lamb's milk or goat's milk. From our perspective, any milk that comes from an animal is milk. Same isur, doraita, same biblical prohibition. I'm not allowed to mix them together. I'm not allowed to cook them together. I'm not allowed to eat them together. We said we have separate dishes, meat and milk. Who remembers which one is smooth and which one has a design? Milk is smooth. The meat should have a design. We which color do we usually put for meat? Red. Which color do we usually put for milk? Blue. Usually. Parve is sometimes white and yellow. Some people put white for milk. I recommend that you put a label in your kitchen so that your guests also know which is the meat and which is the milk. Sometimes you have guests for Shabbos. They get up early in the morning. They want to make themselves a coffee. Sometimes your mother's going to show up and she's going to want to help with the kids. And she's going to make them toast. And she's going to put your butter with the meat knife on the hot toast. It's better to have it delineated. It helps when you have guests. We said the lids of the pots also have to be labeled. And what did we just discuss? We also discussed that parv items, we have to make sure remain parv. Where does this come up? Salt. Okay, so we should have three salt shakers. One for meat, one for milk, and one for parv. Because you pour salt over hot items, and the steam that comes up, so you have steam coming up from the meat, you're sitting down to eat cholent, you're pouring salt into your cholent. The steam from the cholent goes up into your salt. So you have steam, which is actually flavor of the meat, that ends up in the salt shaker. You're having noodles with cheese, with melted cheese, and you decide you want a little bit of salt on it, you're going to pour salt, right? So again, you have steam from the milk coming up. You're eating hot porridge with milk, right? You made yourself porridge, yeah, that's what they call it in English, daisa, which is made with milk very often. You pour salt on it again, you have steam from the milk coming up. So we have meat and milk salt shakers, again, should be labeled. And ideally, you'll very often want a parv salt shaker. Another area that people don't pay attention to is your Friday night. You're about to go to sleep and the chillin smells like it's ready to be eaten. By tomorrow morning, it will be burnt. You want to add hot water to your chillin. So what do people do? They have a hot water urn on the fire, and they're going to pour it into the chulent. But what's going to happen? The steam from the chulent, which is meat, goes up into your hot water urn. Tomorrow morning, you're going to want to make yourself coffee with milk with that hot water, right? So lechatchila, we don't do that. The appropriate way to do it is to pour from the hot water urn into a cup, and from a cup into the pot of chulent. Not directly from a parv pot into a meat or a milk dish. For two reasons. One is the food splashes, and two is the steam comes up into the pot you're pouring from. And that's why if we're going to pour hot water into a meat or a milk dish, we should do it not directly from a hot parv pot or chinik, tea kettle. Guys, are we clear? There's a lot more to discuss, but I think we've hit capacity. We can't go into more details today. We'll have to pick up here Bezat Shem tomorrow night with more laws of meat and milk. We only got started. We said there's a lot to talk about the mouth. Excuse the pun. He was first. Sorry. Yes?
So why is food at restaurants that open Shabbat not kosher?
That's a good question, not for now.
If the items are kosher.
Thursday night. It's a good question. Thursday night. Yes, sir.
No, I don't think they should get a headship because I think Shabbat should be kept in Israel. But I mean, it's... But what makes it unkosher?
We'll talk.
They don't get headships.
They don't.
Thursday night, sir.
So why isn't kosher?
Because they don't.
Yes, sir. I didn't hear you.
Why would the food is not kosher? If the items are kosher.
I can't hear you, sorry.
That's not an answer.
Aren't you over for sure?
We know how many things, other things.
So the chont?
Yeah.
If the chont is fully cooked, so you didn't do any bishul.
We added water.
So? Boiled water, we said it's boiled water from a chinek.
You just say it's fully cooked.
Okay. We'll assume it's cooked. It's fully cooked. Good evening, Benjamin. How are you? Baruch Hashem, God. Who's Eliyahu?
Eliyahu Anavi, because he technically didn't die.
Thursday night. Yes, Yaakov.
Why is it not the full Shashim to have like a residue from the age or whatever come back into like spread it? Like if you wiped the hot dog or whatever and slip the knife back into the hot dog.
Okay, that's a great question. I want to explain his question and and then try to explain an answer. The Mishnah in Tractate Chulin tells us that when you cook something, it emits flavor, and the flavor is as though the item is there. So let's say I have a pot of rice, and I'm cooking a hot dog in the pot of rice. So now the whole pot of rice gets the flavor of the hot dog. It's all considered meat. Okay? Let's say that hot dog wasn't kosher. The whole pot of rice isn't kosher. So now let's look at a hotel. Okay? You have a hotel, and they have a pot the size of half this room. Okay? They have a big pot. They're cooking for 1,000 people. Okay? So they have this big pot. And as they're cooking, they lift the lid, and they're going to stick in this big ladle and taste, right? But as they do that, three flies take a head dive straight into the soup. Boom! Flies are gone. Now the rabbi was in the room, and he saw those three flies dive in. Wait a second. Now this whole big pot of soup is not kosher? What do you do? Right? Flies aren't kosher. Right? We're all in agreement on that. Flies aren't kosher. So what do we do? So we have a few concepts in halacha. Without going into all the details, one of the concepts we have is, let's imagine our cook is a very handy guy, and he scoops one out, scoops two out, scoops three out. So he takes out three dead flies. Is the pot of soup kosher? And the answer is yes. Our assumption is that unless it is a spice, items generally only give flavor up to 60 times their volume. The average food, and that's the concept we say, batel b'shishim. The average food item will only give flavor up to 60 times its volume. So have this little fly, well, you know what, in your pot at home it might come out okay. There was a story in Talmud, and in the Rishonim, the people were cooking milk on the fireplace, and they had chickens running around the house, right? That's how they grew up until 100 years ago. One of my teachers told me he still remembers chickens running around the house. And a chicken jumped into the vat of boiling milk. Right? So the chicken's squawking, and then it squawks out and dies. So now that chicken is not kosher, right? It's Aver Min HaChai. When a chicken's alive, its flavor is not kosher. You can't eat a live chicken, right? Aver Min HaChai. So how much flavor did a live chicken that got cooked in the milk before it flew out give off? Our assumption is things only give off flavor up to 60 times their volume. Now this comes up. This comes up. You're making chulent, right? You have chulent on the pot. And right next to that pot, you have a frying pan where you're making eggs. You're tossing some milk into the eggs. And suddenly it goes, psh, you have some eggs that, you have some, you know, you have some cheese that flew into your chulent pot. You keep a kosher kitchen, but it happens. These are questions that come up. So you can't rule this alone. There are too many details to cover here. And this is what you learn in rabbinics for like a year. We're doing an overview. I'm saying that without going into the details, the general assumption is that things do not retain their flavor once they are dispersed in 60 times their volume. But that's only true when something is mixed in and its flavor is lost. The examples I gave, I purposely said, you see the oil. I said, you see the sour cream or the meaty oil on the noodles. You can't say that volume was dispersed when you see it there. It wasn't dispersed anywhere. It's right there. The fact that in a few minutes it'll be mixed in, no. It's, in hummus, there's room to discuss it. In noodles, it didn't go anywhere. I mean, it slid to somewhere else on the noodle, but it's there. Right? Same thing with fish. In couscous, you might be able to say there's enough oil in the couscous, there's room to discuss that if there's a little bit of oil that got mixed in, that it still remains parv. Could be. But generally, the only time we say batel bishishim is in flavor. When we say it's flavor, when it's dispersed, when it's cooking, when it's actually mixed in. Not when you see the raw material there. There's no such thing as bitul. You see it right there. There's no bitul. That's why I gave that example. But that's a good question.
If you see it right there, you can just take it out.
If you can take it out. It's not always feasible. I brought home pizza for my wife. A slice that was left over this past Friday. My wife didn't get to eat it. And my 2-year-old, who was eating chicken, found it. So now his hands covered with chicken oil are now taking the pizza. He's like, Ma, it's mine, right? He doesn't talk yet, right? But he's grabbed it. And all my kids are saying, Abba, it's not fair. Why should he get it? And I said, I brought it for your mother. And so the kids saw me a minute later take it and toss it in the garbage. They said, Abba, what are you doing? I said, it's meat and milk, Amarnu. The kid had hands covered with grease, meat grease, and now it's mixed in with the cheese grease. It's finished. There's nothing I can do. He can't eat it. We can't eat it. Bam, there goes the pizza. So, saying sometimes it gets mixed in, sometimes it doesn't get mixed in, sometimes you see it and you can take it out. That's true. You see it and you can take it out. That's fine. Okay. I'll just mention one thing that comes up. Sometimes people go to visit their parents, and sometimes people's parents don't know the dietary laws of kashrut. So I say under those circumstances, you have to be careful to buy things that are the volume you will consume. So for example, you buy sour cream, buy a small thing of sour cream. When you open it, finish it. Why? Because maybe a parent was eating a hot dog or a hamburger or whatever, and they wanted to put some sour cream on it. So they might feel like they didn't do you any harm if they take the knife, which they just spread something on their meat, and they just took a little bit of your sour cream. They don't see it as something bad. They think, I just took some of your sour cream. You're sleeping in my house. You're eating my food. Why wouldn't you let me have some sour cream? They don't mean bad. That's why I say, if they're not, they don't even know how to be careful. So buy a small container of sour cream, and when you open it, finish it. Because once you leave it in the fridge, you might not be able to use it again. If it's feasible that your parents, without bad intentions, might have done that, so you have a problem. So that's why it's recommended. Buy small containers. Tuna, sour cream, whatever it is you're eating. You open it, you finish it. What you didn't finish, you leave for them. Okay, so we covered a little bit of the laws of meat and milk today.